We are now live. What's going on? We are live. Season premiere. Season two. We are here.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. All right. Shout out to DJ Nanyo, DJ Ange for that intro. E!
What's going on, Scott? What's going on, man? We back.
Welcome back, baby. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Season two.
We are back.
The long road back, but we made it. We made it. We made it. We are here for season two. This is the Money, Sex, Gen X podcast. I am the man with the plan, the host with the most, the bloke with the stroke.
Oh!
Eric McLeod. And then we got the man, the myth, the legend, Scott Stewart, a.k.a. Big Stu, Professor Stu. It all just depends on how you know him. What is good?
Go. Got my gunshots. All is good, brother, all the time. Glad to be back for season two.
Yeah, me too.
Glad to be back, man.
This is monumental here, and I'm glad to be back. I want to do this before we get into anything else. This first episode of season two is powered by Nelson Career Curators. And Nelson Career Curators, in case you don't know, is an executive career development practice, and it's designed specifically for small business owners, entrepreneurs, and professionals. Now, what Nelson does is what they'll do is they'll partner with you to provide you with an executive coach to manage your career, improve your leadership skills, learn more about your strengths, and position you for opportunities of advancement. www.nelsoncareercurators.com. Their tagline is do what you love, not what you must. Mr. Scott, have you ever benefited from an executive coach?
Man, listen. Yes. Answer your question. And as a matter of fact, you know, I use Nelson Career Curators.
Okay.
And they have already transformed my business and my professional experience in business.
Absolutely.
Highly recommend. You know, what do I say all the time? A doctor needs a doctor, a preacher needs a preacher, teacher needs a teacher. Coach. Business owners need a coach.
Yes, sir. That is absolutely true. I have also benefited from the services of Nelson Career Curators. One thing that they offer that I think is very intriguing is the talent acquisition piece. You know, the Fortune 500 companies, they have access to those types of services, but for sometimes small businesses and not-for-profits, they don't necessarily get that talent acquisition. Like, you know, go get me another killer. Get me another person that can do what I do so that we can grow this company. So, yeah, that's a tremendous value add.
Dope.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Nelson, I like them. I like them a lot, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Shout out to them.
So here we are. We're back for season two. Our topic today is very, very important to both of us, and I'm sure it's important to a lot of people. Wanted to kind of tell you all the thought process behind this topic. So it is 1 million ways to kill a black man. But before we dive into that, Scott, I just want to ask you, what have you been doing these last couple of weeks that we've been off?
Last couple of weeks, huh? You would think it's only been a couple of weeks.
We've been
off for a minute, man. I've been working out.
Okay.
I've been eating right.
Wow, okay.
I've been spending a lot of time trying to manage the lives of my children. I've been raising my twins who are about to be one in a couple of weeks.
Congratulations. All right.
I've been building my business. Man, I've been taking it easy. I've been drinking a lot of water.
Okay, me too. Me too. Spring water? You drinking spring water? What kind of water?
I just bottled water. I ain't jumped into the alkaline and I ain't jumped into all that quite yet. I'm just drink water, bottled water from Mariano's or Jewel or wherever I go shop.
Gotcha.
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah, man. Trying to, man, I'm a Gen Xer, man. I'm trying to keep it right. You know. What about you, man? What you been doing, brother?
Some of the same things, you know, taking care of kids and navigating various family situations. You know, I still have this goal to read 10 books before the end of the year.
Yeah.
Still working my way through that.
Yeah. We should talk about that, man, because I've been in my – are you reading them or are you Audible?
No, I read them, man. I did try the Audible, but it just doesn't suit me, so I'm reading.
Okay.
And I got a book that I've been trying to finish for probably the last 15 years called Crime and Punishment. I'm sure you've heard of that one.
Yeah, for sure.
But yes, I've been trying my best to get through that, so I'm going to try to get through it before the end. And just trying to grow and elevate. I got back into the gym myself, working out and all that. And,
physically the gym, you're at the gym?
The gym in my house.
Yeah. Right.
A little makeshift.
Right.
So I did think about going back to the gym, but I'm not quite there yet. You know, I'm a little skittish about that still, but we'll try to make it back.
So you still kind of quarantining yourself a little bit, huh?
A little bit, yeah.
Are you wearing your mask or are you like,
nah? Yeah, I'm wearing them. My mom be sending me like boxes of masks.
So really?
I don't have that excuse of I can't find them and all that. I got plenty of masks. He even sent me yesterday, we got a box with the shield.
Oh yeah, face shields.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm gonna do that one, Mom, but I'm gonna definitely, you know, keep wearing a mask. But yeah, I'm masked up and trying to keep the 6 feet apart and all of that. How are you doing with that? Are you masked up when you go out?
I'm masked up. I'm still pretty holed up, man. I don't really go out. You know, I'm seeing then you know, one of the things that affected me during the pandemic when it was at its height, man, was I didn't see my son live with his mom, man. And I wasn't going around because his mom's a nurse, you know, right? So I wasn't going around. So I didn't, other than FaceTime video, I hadn't seen my son for like a couple of months. You know, I would drive by and see from a distance.
Yeah.
But this summer, I started going to get him again, you know, and bringing them over to the house, and it's been weird, man. So between just going to get my son and hang out with him, you know, and essential errands, I'm in the crib. I'm holed up. I step outside, you know, get some fresh air every day, but I'm in the crib, man. I'm at the house, bro. A matter of fact, I had a business opportunity just came through, and the guy was like, hey, we can meet. Then you come out and we can go to a coffee shop. And I was like, nah, son. You know what I mean? Like,
not happening.
Nah, I ain't there yet. Like, we can do virtual, you know, like. Yeah, I'm not on that right now, man. So I'm still working through looking at people funny for not wearing a mask, trying not to be too judgmental.
Sure.
Cats across the street from me last night had a party, you know, not a mask in sight. So I just walked in the crib, man, and kept my opinions to myself as I'm over it, you know? Yeah, man.
Well, my son told me something interesting on that note. He said that he was watching some show, and there were a bunch of young people on there, and they were saying that they didn't wear masks because it was a sign of being weak.
Dang.
And you know, they kind of elaborated on that. They felt like if you died from COVID, you were weak.
Damn.
And they weren't weak, so they didn't know. I thought that was interesting.
I'm going to work on the timing of our sound effects, but.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
And I do know that I've heard people on the street say that, man, that, you know, you got a mask on, you might have increased your chances of being a victim out here in these streets. Yeah. You know, like, oh, we got one, you know, so.
Oh, really? I didn't hear that.
That's unfortunate, man. I know a few people that's on the streets, man. So, you know, I get some inside tips sometimes. Okay. You know, so those are potential vics. They, you know, so yeah, I've heard that, you know.
So if you wear a mask, you're a vic.
You potential.
That's a new one on me. You're a sucker. You're a sucker if you got the mask on.
You're kind of weak. You weak.
So I guess my son, what he was talking about, I guess people really think that. You know what I mean? Like, you know. And that's interesting. I would have never thought that.
And, you know, I know we got another topic, but, you know, it is mostly what I find. It's definitely a older generation that's definitely like on their masks, bro. You know?
Yeah. I'm on it.
For sure.
Let me give it. I want to talk about that more at some point. That whole psychology.
I mean, that's actually one of the million ways to kill a black man. You know, he protecting his health, you know, and other people trying to prey on it. You know, now we in the streets trying to figure out, who do we play up to? Do we play up to protecting us on the streets and not wear masks so we can show that bravado? Or do you do what you're supposed to do and don't worry about it? You know, so now we got something else to think about as a man.
Something else, right. Another way that you could possibly be killed. You know, whether it's just somebody looking at you like, yo, homeboy is a sucker, you know what I mean? Like, it might not even be a gun or anything like that. It's just the viewpoint of you because of what you're choosing to do.
Yeah, man. Let me give a shout out real quick in the chat to my man. Will Green is in the chats with us today. So he's like, yeah, that's not cool, you know. That's another way to kill us. And let me give a shout out to Miss Betty Nelson, who's saying, protecting yourself is never weak.
Absolutely.
I love the female perspective.
Absolutely. What's up, Will? Glad you tuned in, Betty. I definitely agree with that. Protecting yourself is never weak. And that's interesting. So that's a good segue into our topic today. So a little bit about why I was thinking about this and I approached you with it. I started really thinking about, we all know the physical violence is upon us, you know, every day as a black man. And, you know, I'm sure, as like a lot of us, when we walk out the door, we really have to be careful in so many different ways. And we know that, you know, you're trying to protect your physical life. But it really got me thinking about this whole mental, emotional, and spiritual realm. I don't really hear that conversation as much. And I would be the first person to say that before a person faces a physical death, I would imagine that there are many non-physical, emotional, psychological, spiritual deaths that person could have faced before they even got to the point of being physically removed from the planet Earth. And so I thought about that, and I talked to you about it, and we both, I think, came to this consensus that, yeah, absolutely, there's million ways to kill a black man, but this other non-tangible realm is definitely one of the most formidable, one of the most powerful ways that are used to kill us.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that, man. And I was watching something on TV. It was like, man, we as black men, you know, we're taught that you're not supposed to show emotions. That's a sign of weakness. And so we keep a lot of things bottled up and we don't really talk about it. Right. We don't have a place to, which is in many ways killing us internally. Right. And we know that some of the things that we keep bottled up, they play out in the physical realm, you know, our blood pressure, right. Like stress.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, man, it's a real thing, man, what you're talking about. We just not being, sometimes that's another way to kill a black man, just not feeling like you can be real and honest with yourself.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
So it's more than just this racist cop having a knee on our neck. It's the proverbial knees.
Yeah.
It's a lot of knees, at least a million knees on our necks almost every day. And our work is to push through and carry all of this on our backs, right?
That's true. Very true.
I want to shout out my man. We got a lot of people watching in. Kendall Beats, Kendall Presley, what's up? Bill, my cousin. Justin, we got Brent Clemens, Jamar Washington. What's up, Jamar? Everybody's chiming in. Please put into the chat your comments. What are some of the ways that you feel a black man can be killed outside of the gun? Outside of the gun, how else are black men being killed out here?
Indeed. Brother, I wanted to make sure you can still hear my audio. Good?
Yeah, man. You good.
So let's talk about this. Let's dig into this. So we know, you know, like we said, there's this non-physical. So what I wanted to ask you, so we're both parents. We were both children at one point. We were both teenagers, young adults. Now we're Gen X, you know, adults. And I wanted to ask you to just think back a little bit about ways that people specifically tried to kill you throughout your journey to get to where you are now in that non-physical realm.
So outside of the times that I've attempted to be stuck up, we're talking about outside of that, we're talking about outside of the one time when I was kidnapped, mm-hmm. talking about outside of that.
Okay.
Talking about like character assassinations,
yeah, character spiritual assassinations.
The times the teachers told me to be realistic, I'm thinking too big,
yeah,
those things. Are we talking about that?
That is absolutely what we're talking about, right?
Are we talking about mama coddling me? Love to moms, love moms. We're talking about maybe the coddling too long, providing too much protection as a youngster, well into my teenage years, where sometimes you're learning how to be a man a little late or later, you know, not having the responsibilities of, you know, chores, for example. Even though I had to do the chores, but you know, wanting to coddle the son.
Coddle the son. That's, so are we kind of talking about, when we get into this, are we kind of talking about, you know, a person in a physically grown body who's still a child? So, you know, you were able to evolve beyond those situations and evolve into a grown black man. But like some people obviously don't have that same trajectory, and so they look grown. But are we talking about that, and then but mentally they've been killed from being a man, but they're still a child?
So this is great, because I think many of us men are, many of us still operate from a childhood trauma. So many of us at our core, probably, I think my go-to age, you know, is probably 15 or 16. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So yeah, I'm a grown man in a grown man's body, but yeah, there's some things that from our childhood that have us still operating kind of in that space sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah, so that coddling, you know, instead of saying, you know, instead of it being, well, you got to figure this out. You know, maybe some of that is, baby, it'll be okay. You don't have to worry about that. It's like, nah, you know, you need to figure this stuff out. Yeah. Like, you got to solve this problem. You can't be like, you know, well, he's only 11, he's only 10, he's only 9, he's only 15, he's only 17. Like, that's, you're killing this man. You got to develop into a man. At some point, you have to learn to take responsibility for those decisions. And without that, killing this man, like he doesn't become a man. He's always going to be longing for that coddle.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's interesting. I as you're talking about that, I'm thinking about, you know, do people have a different definition of what manhood is? And does that lead to a lot of this coddling that we're talking about? Because I think about the civil rights movement and various books that I've read, you know, by different Black authors and people. And I'm like, a lot of these people were really fighting to be seen as a man. You know, of course, a Black man, but just a man, period. Right. And I wonder if we were to go back in time and talk to them about what it is they were fighting for specifically, would that tie into or jive with our current definition of what a man is?
Particularly from that generation, I bet it would, right? Like, number one, respect. So the lack of respect is killing me. So you're not going to respect me? You know, that's where a lot of fights jump off. Like, that's where a lot of physical altercations come into play out of just pure lack of respect. So as a man, I need to be respected. And that's in every, you're not going to come up in my house and disrespect me, son. You're not just going to be over here and just be disrespecting me, son. That's like, and would you agree that that's, do you think that's one of the first characteristics, first asks that we have of being a man? You got to respect me, son.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm just thinking, I feel like people have different definitions of what respect is. You know, I've seen a lot of stuff play out in people's homes, even in my own home, and sometimes there was a misunderstanding about what respectful behavior is and what it isn't.
What is respect? Please type it in the chat. What is respect?
What is respect?
What does it mean to be
in someone's home, or just respect to a man or a Black man? What is that for you? You know?
Yeah.
What is, I do think people have different definitions of that.
What are some of the other ways that maybe you've come up with to kill a Black man?
You know, one way that I see is undermining a Black man in sort of a family dynamic.
Whew.
That happens quite often. And I don't know if it's always a malicious sort of intent, but it absolutely does happen. And maybe it's just because sometimes parents get caught up in their own vision for the child.
Yeah.
But I kind of feel like when a Black man is involved, it's just very easy to kind of go down that road if you don't try to stop it or put, you know, or try to stop that train and say, hey, let's take a step back. Like, I need you, back to your, what you said, I need you to respect me as a Black man. Now, here's where I think it's interesting, like being able to articulate what you think that respect is and how you feel like it got broken.
So one of my and one of my go-to arguments in this space sometimes comes down to relationships, especially when it involves kids.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the father of my children, and sometimes having felt right. emasculated.
Yeah.
Sometimes having felt emasculated as a man, like my sperm didn't count as much as the birthing, you know, like it's not equal.
Right. You
know what I mean? Like that's like it ain't equal. Like your sperm don't count. Like you. Anytime I hear a woman refer to a man as a sperm donor or a child refer to their father as a sperm donor. Now, we ain't just talking Black men here, but we are talking Black men specifically. But, of course, this applies to men. And that go. I know there's another side to that conversation, but in my situation, I'm not a deadbeat dad. I ain't nowhere near a deadbeat dad, right? Or a deadbeat father to my children.
Yeah.
So that emasculation, like my existence is sometimes maybe not as important.
Yes.
Because woman, I don't like what I can do. I can do bad all by myself.
Right.
I don't need you. That's yeah, how you question your whole soul, brother.
True indeed. And I mean, that can play out. I want to read Will Green's comment. He said, your actions can dictate how respect is going to be recurved and earned. What's your integrity when you think the kids aren't watching you? They are.
I believe
absolutely.
That.
Yeah, you definitely have to earn respect for sure. For sure.
Good
but I question that too sometimes. It's like you could be acting in a way where you feel like you've earned respect and you still don't receive it because the other person that you're dealing with, again, they might have a very different view of respect versus disrespect. They might not feel like they're disrespecting you, but you feel that they are.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's something that, you know, I wonder if we'll get to a point where we can have a common definition because we're talking about 1 billion ways to kill a black man. And you got people out there who might say, well, I don't think undermining a black man is killing him. I'm just undermining them. But we're saying, nah, it is killing.
Yeah, I believe, like, I still believe. So we did an episode last season about gender, the changing of gender roles.
Yeah.
I was real heavy about that whole conversation, right? And even today, I think to hear women call themselves kings.
Yeah.
Oh, that hurts my soul, man.
I see that on Instagram a lot.
I that hurts my soul because I always believe a man is a king and a woman can never be a king. She's always a queen.
Right.
And we have a guest joining us today.
We do.
Who is on standby.
Can't wait to hear her perspective.
She is going to chime in. I'm going to let you introduce her before we bring in, because I think this is a great segue. And RC, can you hear? All right. Well, hold on. We're going to bring you on in 1 second. And I'm going to let Eric introduce you. But we're talking at this point is my statement is a man is a king and a woman can never be a king. She'll never be a king. I'm taking that with me to the grave. She'll always be a queen. A man is a king. A woman is a queen. She'll never be a king. E, you want to introduce RC?
I do. I want to make this quick comment, though. I like what you said about the king and the queen. I'm just going to say, from my perspective, I will say a man could be a king and a woman could be a queen. Okay. Depending on how they live their lives on a daily basis. But they definitely have that natural, like you said, birthright of being a king or a queen. Okay. I just want to put my 2 cents in on that. So, yes, we got R.C. Riley that's about to join us. R.C. Riley is a very dynamic woman who is involved in a lot of things related to art. She has a one-woman show that she was doing for quite some time that is very thought-provoking and very entertaining and really dives into some topics that a lot of people don't like to talk about. One being specifically sexual assault against women, a very uncomfortable conversation for many, especially since, you know, there are many people who have engaged or assaulted individuals. So, you know, I'm sure they don't want to hear those conversations. R.C. Riley is an artist, in my opinion, my humble opinion. She is a person who creates and brings things into existence. She now has her own show called Musings with R.C., where she brings on a variety of different guests. I think last week or one of the weeks, not close to this one, she had someone on that had a mobile spa.
Yeah.
It was interesting. She had a pastor on. She has an attorney coming on soon who's going to be talking about building wealth. So just a variety of different types of guests. Very entertaining. But yes, RC, thank you.
Hello, hello. I'm just trying to start a watch party for my crew. Y'all have all the fancy sound effects.
Trying to step it up for season two. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
We got to get a handle on the sound effects.
Work in progress. So, RC, we are, thank you for joining us today. We are talking about 1 million ways to kill a black man. I want to be very clear. One of the reasons why I invited you on is because I don't think you will be afraid to mix it up a little bit and have this conversation and say what you truly think on the topic.
So I do want to add, you are correct. I am not shy in front of a microphone or a camera. Right. But I do just want to add a little bit to the introduction so your audience understands my perspective. And so I am a writer, an activist, and a mother who self-identifies as a Christian, queer, black woman. So that is the lens through which I see the world and through which I'm going to be engaging in conversation with you all today. So in general, the work that I do centers around the intersectionality of faith, race, gender, and sexuality. And as you referenced my one woman show, it tackles all those things. And I tell short stories around the city. And so it all talks about those things there. Now, with the show that I have, Monday Musings with RC, it's really about highlighting what Black people are doing in the community right now, as well as ensuring that people are aware of what's going on socially. So that's why there's a gamut of different types of guests on the show. Okay. So, and you all, right, a couple of weeks ago were guests, and we had a very lively conversation, so I'm excited to be here and piggyback on whatever you all talk about.
Okay. Well, we're going to go back in time back to that conversation, and I want you to clarify if I don't get this right, but you said something that really sparked my thought process, and I was like, I want to bring her back specifically for that comment. Now, let me know if I'm getting this right. We were having a conversation and you were talking, and then you were saying something to the effect of, in response to Scott, about black men are so far up the pyramid that it's difficult for them to understand what's going on with the black woman. Am I getting that right?
So I not to necessarily say they couldn't understand what was going on with the black woman, but more of black men are socialized so differently. And because they in the hierarchy are higher than women in this patriarchal society, that they wouldn't be able to have the same perspective as women. So do we agree that we live under a patriarchy? Is that something we all agree to?
I find it difficult to agree with that now.
Now, okay, so when I say patriarchy, when I say patriarchy, I mean a social system where men hold primary power and they hold predominant roles in political leadership or social privilege, things of that nature within the society.
Not anymore.
I don't agree with that at all.
All right. So you don't believe that, for instance, the majority of our presidents have been men because of the patriarchy that we live in, and that it's a big deal for women to then run for president or vice president, and it's a big deal that they are like the first woman to do this. It wouldn't be a big deal if they were the first woman if there had been a lot of women in the past.
Well, let me be clear though, RC. I'm talking about the black men specifically. I'm not talking about men. I'm talking about black men.
Black men specifically. Yes. So, and I don't see how we can take black men out of a larger society, because the way that black men function in this world, I think, is a result of our patriarchy. And so you have to start there to then keep trickling down to the relationship within our culture. So it's that intercultural experience from the white to black, and then the intracultural experience within the black community between black men and black women. In general, there are statistics that have habitually shown that men make more money than women in general. But now you're talking about black men. Now, we also know within the black community, statistics show that more black women are more highly educated than black men. So you may argue, and again, I don't know the stats broken down by black men and women. So you may argue that by that fact that black men may make more on the dollar to black women. I don't know that stat, but I do know that overall women make less than men. And that's where I'm talking about that patriarchy. And in general, the man is seen as the head, the one who's in power over the household. That dates back to biblical days. So in general, the way that our society functions, men are seen as the leaders over the families. The family includes the woman. The men are seen as the ones who are the protectors because they need to protect the vulnerable. That vulnerable would be the woman as well as the children. So my point is that if a man's in that position, his perspective is very different than the woman's perspective. Just like my perspective as a parent is very different than my son's as a child. When we look at the same situation, my son may say, my mom won't let me watch TV at midnight. She's a jerk. And I say, I'm not letting my son watch TV after midnight because he'll be tired in the morning. Same situation, different perspectives because of the hierarchy, because I'm the parent. In this society, we know that the parents have a higher standing than the child because I'm the protector. I'm caring for this child. So that's kind of the point that I'm making, the backdrop of that. And it's not to say that men don't understand at all where women come from. But at the same time, when we argue that a white man can't understand the perspective of a black man because he's not a black man in this society, it's similar to that in saying that a black man functions in this world as a black man, not as a black woman. And just to give you another scenario, the other day, I think you both know I've been caring for my great aunt. She's 83 years old. I've been the primary caregiver for a couple of years now. And I was getting tired, so I needed some help. So I called my cousin. My cousin came in town from out of state. And he comes in town and like in the middle of the night, he could just leave the house, leave the windows wide open, walk down the street in the middle of the night. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you left the windows open. Anybody in the neighborhood could have seen into the house and she was left vulnerable and you're walking out and they know you're not there. And then somebody could have mugged you on the street. You're just walking late at night. His perspective as a man, a black man in this world is, yeah, so I wasn't thinking about all that. I was walking outside. I knew I would come right back. And if somebody tried to bother me, I wish I would. Now, my perspective as a woman is I'm not going to leave that home vulnerable. So I'm going to close all the blinds so nobody looks inside. And I'm certainly not going to walk down the street alone after dark. His perspective is not my perspective. So he couldn't see without having a discussion with me how I would do things differently. And that's the point I was trying to make. Because of where he is as a black man, because we're both black, so the difference is he has a penis out of a vagina, just be real. So he gets to function in this world like he has a little bit of a leg up, for instance, if somebody were to come and try to harm him. He feels that he's stronger, he's more able to protect himself. And the way I've been socialized, I believe that somebody else would overpower me and that would leave me and my aunt vulnerable. We have different perspectives.
Yeah.
So I'll agree.
I have a lot that I want to say about that, but Scott, do you want to dive
in? I mean, fundamentally, I agree, right? So, you know, Eric and I don't have the same perspective. We're both black men, but we don't have the same perspective of the same situation, right? Yeah. I agree. So, you know, I'll give you your credit for that. I'll never be able to fully understand what it is to be a woman or a black woman. I just never, ever will because I'm not. So I give you that.
Yeah, and I mean, you raised some great points. I do want to say this, though we live in the type of society that you described where it's patriarchal, I don't feel like that applies to black men at this point, simply because, and you could, you know, your argument where you're like, well, you know, men still make more than women. True indeed, but when you really look at how many black men, let's just look at corporate America. How many black men are in corporate America versus black women, and how many black men are in prison as opposed to being in corporate America? So yeah, through the society, yeah, if I'm in corporate or something, I will make more, but I'm not in corporate. The numbers show I'm in prison. Mm. So by me being in prison, a lot of my power has been stripped. I don't have the ability to lead the family. You all are leading the family primarily, a lot of black women, and thank you for that. But that's, you know, unfortunately, I'm away.
This is a moment.
Even in the conversation you were saying when your cousin came into town and he wasn't scared to go outside and all that, I understand that. However, at the end of the day, when I go back outside, the black man is the one who's getting hurt the most by the police. Now, I know we have situations like Breonna Taylor, and I'm not trying to, I hate that happened, and it happens often, even in cases that we don't know about. However, we all, I think, will agree that mainly it's black men who are being killed and shot.
Now,
by the police as well as by other people who look like us.
I may challenge you a little bit on that one, Eric, a little bit myself.
Please do.
I think women suffer more at the hands of the police and the abuse of power than men. Like women probably, and I'm going out on a major limb here, are more victimized by, let's say, police than a black man.
I think it's for different reasons, though.
Yeah, when they get pulled over at stops, you get the wrong cop, man. It's a lot of stuff happening that women don't tell us about as men.
And again, I would argue that's because of the patriarchal society. That male officer feels that woman can be subjugated to him. And so he can make comments, sexual innuendos, make us feel very uncomfortable. And that's what I'm saying, where you can think we don't live in a patriarchal society, but we do. I mean, that's okay if you don't think that, but that's just how it is.
I'm not saying we don't live in a patriarchal society. I'm saying that I'm not able to participate in it largely because I'm in prison.
Well,
listen, please, let's not try to diminish the fact of how many black men are in prison right now. You know, women, I've heard you all say over and over, not necessarily URC, but women who are looking for a male partner. There's not enough men out here. There's not enough men. Well, a lot of that is because they're in prison. So yeah, we live in a patriarchal society, but where are the majority of the black men? Either they're in prison, a lot of them are on drugs at this point. A lot of people are out of the patriarchal system that you're talking about. They're not even able to participate in.
So that is the patriarchal system. That's a part of it. Those white people in power are the ones that make the rules to decide who's imprisoned. So they are a product of this patriarchal society. So while I hear your argument, it is not taking into account the whole prison complex, the whole system. That's white folks in power that get to keep that thing going and put our black men in that prison. So they are participating. Whether they're actively participating or not is a different story. And it's similar to me with the political process. People will say, and I'm talking about black people, will have said to me repeatedly that my vote won't matter. They're going to do what they want to do. My vote doesn't count. And nothing that we vote on affects me. Okay, because they're thinking that day to day, the big issues like climate control, foreign policy, foreign relations, things like that don't affect them. But I always argue that they do because it trickles down. First of all, whether or not you can even own a home, you know, due to whether the taxes are going to be too high and you won't be able to afford it, whether there are programs available for people if you're a veteran or not, all types of resources from your local government to how much you pay for water, if your water is clean or not. Even though people may feel like they're not a product of it or a part of it or participate in it, they do. It's just our ignorance. Black men being in prison at such high rates is a part of that patriarchal society and capitalism. They're all making money off black and brown people being in prison. And if black and brown people, more of us, were in power, being able to make decisions and cared about our communities, then we'd be able to shift. Now, I believe we have power, but I don't think that we have galvanized enough and really exercised the power that we possess. But I do believe that is that's just a part of the patriarchy. It's unfortunate, but yeah. And which is another reason why, like you all, I mean, and other black men out there, I think, try to have these conversations and do work around helping to reform the prison industrial complex, because I know a lot of people that are working very hard to reform that system. I mean, my son and I go to marches and rallies and meetings specifically around that. And I hear horror story after horror story of Black men who have been in prison for 20, 30 years and who have been just dealing with so much torture over the years over little things like weed or, you know, whatever. Back then it may have been more heroin or cocaine, but not anything that should put them in prison for this long and deal with all of that. That's that patriarchal society that's set up to keep them there.
We are, so today, this is the Money, Sex, Gen X podcast. We're talking about a million ways to kill a Black man. We got my man, Big Stu here. We have our special guest, R.C. Riley, and we are chopping it up about patriarchal societies. We're talking about where the Black man fits in all of this. I think we can all agree to disagree. I don't want to beat a dead horse. I definitely perspectives of both of you. Now, RC, you mentioned your sexuality in your introduction. So I just want to ask you specifically, what is your view of Black men? How do you, when you think about, when Black men come across your mind,
that's a good question.
What's the feeling that you get?
That is a very good question, Eric. I have never been asked that question, and I appreciate you asking me that. So I love Black men. I'm a daddy's girl. So, I mean, when I think of Black men, I think of my daddy. Okay. I do. So it warms my heart. I'm the only girl of four. I have two older brothers, one younger brother. And I was the first granddaughter on my mom's side. So I've been around, you know, boys and men all my life. So for me, I feel like we need to celebrate our Black men, and that Black men and women really need to appreciate that relationship that we have. I have probably more close male friends than close female friends, to be honest with you. And I will say it's because I can pick up the phone any time of day, call one of my male friends, because they actually don't have or don't perceive their sense of responsibility the same way that women do. So they may be fathers, but when I pick up the phone and call them, they're like, oh yeah, I got a minute. Whereas I can call a girlfriend who's a mom, and she's like, girl, I got the baby, I got this, I got that, I got that, I got that. And so the men may have responsibilities, but it's just how people compartmentalize those things. And so, you know, if a woman has all that stuff and probably trying to do seven more things than the man is, she might not have that kind of time. So on a regular basis, I'd say I talk to five different close men friends, the age in range from 40 to 68. And I love every single one of them so hard, so hard. I love Black men.
That's good to hear.
I love Black men. Yeah.
Let me ask a question along those lines. So you're a single mom?
Yes.
All right, of a son.
I mean, and I only hesitate because single as in unmarried, but there's no way, shape, or form that I would ever say that I raised my child alone.
Okay.
Those men that are in my life, they help me raise my child. My son helps me, my mother and father helped me raise my child. I mean, yeah. So
how
I'm
do
not
you,
raising him alone.
How do you approach raising your son to be a Black man?
I would say that's an intricate balance, because one of the things I think one of you said is, and people say often, a woman can't be a man, right? She can't be a father. And I know on Mother's Day or Father's Day, some people believe that they should send a Father's Day message to single mothers.
Right. Because kind of to that point, RC, of like, if a man can't understand the perspective of a woman, how do women always take on the perspective of they don't need a father, they can do it, they don't need, like, they got it
right
without a father?
Well, I'm not the one. Now my son's biological father isn't in his life, but that's a different story. But I've had my father in his life from day one, and other men in my life. Like my best friends have been there for my son from day one. So you cannot not have a strong male presence in a young boy's life. I think that would be at the detriment to that child. But not to say that it's just because he's a boy, because I believe in the balance of gender identities and gender expressions within the home. And so I don't think that any child should be left with just one, right, one parent or one gender identity or one gender expression, because it's we bring so much to the table. And right, because we're socialized different, I really cannot feel or anticipate some of the feelings that my son will have being a Black man, like a Black man can. I don't know what it feels like to step outside my door and not feel afraid that somebody might sexually assault me. And yet the men that I talk to aren't worried about that. So how he presents himself, for all I know, I could be raising him to function how I function with that fear in the back of my mind. And I wouldn't want that. And so when we talk about emasculating men and things of that nature, I think that sometimes we, as single mothers, we have to be very careful about leaving out the presence of a Black man and a young child, whether male or female, in their life, because I can't tap into that. I only can experience the world from where I sit, and my son is totally different. And I try very hard. I think I overcompensate the other way because I don't want to raise him to be, to not speak his voice and to feel confident in his manhood. I oftentimes will have him do things that other people feel like, well, maybe he's too young. Maybe he shouldn't get involved in it, or maybe he shouldn't speak up. And I have him speak up for himself early because I think I'm overcompensating because I'm a woman. I'm thinking I'm probably inadvertently teaching him to hold back.
Right.
So I do the other side because I see all these women who are babying their boys well up into, you know, their 20s. And I'm like, well, I told my son when he was 5 years old, you're not going to live with me after 18. No, right. But I'm going the opposite direction. He may, for all I know, feel right now like my mom doesn't support me or she's not going to care for me. Right. And so it's a delicate balance for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a very great answer, RC.
I want to give these comments a little bit. Will Green has been making some comments. He said, patriarchal society equals white male society, not Black male. I definitely agree with that. One of the struggles the Black man has to deal with, the continued struggle of identity for Black men, not necessarily for Black women. I think I really agree with that. Betty Nelson says career progression for Black women are at 60% and for Black men are at 45% on a pay scale. Will Green, awesome discussion. And then his last comment, patriarchal society. That's a repeat. So, yeah, I think, you know, I don't want to go back into this too much, but I do think it's, you know, how, like you said, a Black man can't identify with going outside and having to worry about being sexually assaulted. That's a very valid point. On the flip side of that, I do think it's hard for a Black woman to understand what our psychology is when we walk outside, knowing that you could have someone that looks like you that's trying to shoot you with a gun. You could have the police trying to do it. You might have to prove your manhood through fighting and all these other violent situations. Right. Black women don't necessarily, I know that there might be some situations where you might have to deal with that, but we have to deal with that almost on a daily basis, right, at times. And I think that gets lost. That's a tremendous burden to carry around. It's not easy.
That is. And I will say raising a Black child who is going to grow up to be a Black man, I often find myself unsure as to how to hold the conversations around that when he's out in the world. Because on one hand, I want to ask him, well, how do you feel in this situation? But on the other hand, I don't want to bring something up to make him feel uncomfortable. And that's where I think that where that Black man being involved will model the behavior. And so as long as it's a positive role model, that's something I can't do. I can't model that for him. So I have really leaned on the Black men in my world. And I will tell you, they are phenomenal men, hands down. The men in my world, they don't miss opportunities to model for my son what it looks like to handle and navigate themselves in this world. And they all do it very differently, which is why I have them all in my son's world, because there's some that are very just like, you know, kind of rugged and in there, whereas I'm like, oh no, not my, with my baby. Don't talk like that around him. Don't do that. Don't walk like that. And they're like, no, baby, no. And so then there's other ones who are very mindful of mommy. And so they're like, okay, I'm gonna walk this little line around you. But then when I'm alone with him, I'm gonna talk to him. And that even is a model, because he's, and I don't know if that's good or bad. I don't think it's either one necessarily. But in doing that, he's showing that, okay, we have to consider your mom's feelings, recognize those, respect that, because she is your mother and she cares for you. At the same time, you're going to grow up to be more in my position than hers. So this is how we're going to function today.
Yeah.
So we, I, single moms have a tough job in trying to make sure that that happens, because I think that we're so busy trying to do the day to day that we often forget about that. And I think I've just been blessed to have so many strong males in my life. Yeah.
Really? I want to ask you something else too while you're still here. You still good to stay on?
Hold on.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I want to get into this. This is something that's very important to me. So when we start talking about these million ways, I want to share something that I went through with my son. And I think this speaks to why I wanted to do this in the first place. So as you all both know, I have a son and I have a daughter. Daughter's 17, my son is 12. When they were younger, people in our family, they were always so quick to talk about how intelligent my daughter was. Mm-hmm. Oh, she's so intelligent. And she is. She is intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
But they were always, oh, he's so intelligent. She's so intelligent. She's so smart. She's so this and that. And I'd be like, yeah, no, thank you. But when it came to my son, there were certain members of my family, they would only focus on what he did that was bad. You know, he did this and he did that. And after, it would irritate me when they said it, just because as a parent, you don't want to hear people saying stuff about your child. So I would say something to him. But then over time, I started to notice a pattern in the sense that everything my son did, it was bad, or it was so comical what he was doing, you know, like he was a clown or something.
Mm-hmm.
I had to end up stepping to them like, yo, you always are talking about my daughter being this, that, and the other. Why you always have these little side shots at my son?
Mm-hmm.
And I think when I said that, they didn't even realize that they were doing it. You know what I mean? And so I wanted to ask both of you, that you both have sons, have you ever experienced that with your sons?
I'll let Scott answer.
Well, no. I think the expectation of my son, who, by the way, is tuning in
to this right now,
I think the expectation is that he'll, you know, it's still very traditional, you know, what type of athlete he'll be or what he'll do with his hands, more so than his level of intelligence. I mean, my son wrote his first book at 6 years old. I had nothing to do with it.
Wow.
I had nothing to do with
that's awesome.
The only thing I had to do with it, RC, was when he said, Daddy, I want to write a book. I said, if you write it, I'll help you get it published.
Nice.
And he wrote it and I helped him get it published. So he's very smart, but I think there's still this expectation of play a sport, you know,
right.
What are you going to do physically, you know, even some of it is from me, like every day is like, how many pushups did you do today?
If you call my son and ask him that question, I'm okay with you asking my baby that.
Yeah, it's like
he needs
that.
To do some push-ups.
Yeah, right. So that's my experience. That's my experience.
And you know, my experience with the whole clown thing, I have more issues, and I don't want to take you off this, but I have more issues with white children and white women. Because, for instance, white kids would at certain times think that anything my son did was so hilarious. And yeah, I was like,
that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
No, that's not okay. And so one time my son was at this event, we go camping a lot. He was standing on top of the table and all these white kids were around the bench, the park bench. He was on top doing something silly, and they were laughing. And when I tell you, I almost choked him, pulling him down.
Right.
you know, the burning inside of me from that situation. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. And they all giggling at the expense of my young black boy. And I was like, oh, that can never happen again. Now, of course, at that time, I don't know, he might have been in fourth grade or third grade. He probably didn't understand the implications, but I was like, no, I better never see that one again. So those have been my issues, how black boys view him and treat him. And it's always like he's something to be looked at, or do you get what I'm saying? Like, oh, let's see what he's going to do.
Right.
Which is why you have to be mindful about having our black boys in all white spaces. So on one hand, we want to feel like, well, you know, I make good money and these are the better schools and they have better resources. On the other hand, what about the cultural impact? And what about, you know, who he is inside and his self-confidence, not being able to look around him and see people to look like him? So that's another balance. And then from white women, the teacher at the school, my son was getting like some C's on like two or three tests and like in a row. And I was like, what's going on? And she was like, oh, he's doing fantastic. I was like, fantastic. So it looks to me like he's going to keep getting D's. He's going to end up getting D's. And so she was like, oh, that's the best they can do. We know that.
Mm.
And
That's on the list.
That's the best he can do. We know.
That's the best they can do. We know that. And I was like, so what? And what? And so I said, before we continue, let me get your principal in here. So the principal comes and I said, can you just explain to me, like, repeat what you said? And she said it calmly. She's like, right. We know that those children, you know, that's the best that they can do. And so we work with them and let them just go ahead. And that's fine. We understand that. And the principal turned red. And I was like, so do you see his expression? Do you understand why? And she was like, no, what's the problem? She was pushing all her other children in the class to do well on these exams and wasn't offering any other services to my son, because in her mind, as a black child, that's the best he can do. And I say, not just as a black child, but as a black boy.
Yeah.
That infuriated me. Yeah. So those are issues that I've had. And that's where, as a single parent, you feel like, if I had a black man next to me right now, like, because again, because as a man and how they fear black men, unfortunately, she would have been stuttering. And for me, she's like, no, it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. And real quick, hey, Eric, real quick, sir. I think we need to pay a bill.
We do need to pay a bill. And, you know, this part of the show is powered by MLP Virtual Assistant Services. If you're out there, if you're running a small business, a not-for-profit organization, and you find yourself in a situation where you just cannot continue to do all of the work on your own, you might want to think about hiring a virtual assistant. Now, we know a lot of people are leveraging virtual assistants now because of the pandemic, but you can leverage a virtual assistant even if there was no pandemic, just because a lot of times it's cost-effective. And you could maybe leverage more than one due to the lower cost than having an actual employee to handle your administrative tasks. So we want you to check out MLP Virtual Assistants. You can check out their website. They're all over social media. And we think you'll be pleased with the support that you find. All right, before we get a little bit of bills, I want to get Bridget's comment out there. Bridget Scarborough says, I don't think the dismantling of a patriarchal society will necessarily result in less black men in prison. What do we think about that? So if the patriarchal society is dismantled, what does that do with black men going to prison? Does it change?
I mean, it's just not a one way to fix this, the prison industrial complex. I mean, so I don't agree that that's the only way to, but that's one angle that we can come from. But I mean, there are a lot of people who are putting their heads together right now working on this issue. So I think that it has to come from a larger society, the folks in power, but also I think from our communities up as well. So within the community, one of the things that I always push, I'm always in the communities talking just to people when I'm out there, like, okay, let's just clean the streets in the neighborhood and just talk to people in the neighborhood. It's about getting back to things like knowing your neighbors.
Sure.
Greeting them, talking to them. And so when you have a relationship with your neighbors, when there's somebody else who's coming in doing something from the outside, bringing in drugs or things of that nature, then you have a more of a support system to get that out. So then if that doesn't come into your community, then you won't have the problem with the people in your community being affected by it negatively and then being going to prison. That doesn't mean people in your community can't drive somewhere else. But this is different. We're talking about the high rates of Black men. So there's always going to be Black, white, and everybody else in prison who commit a crime. But we're talking about the differences in the time that they get and the overall sentencing and how people are treated once they're there.
Right. I have a burning question for you, R.C.
A burning question?
It might make you uncomfortable. A burning question.
Okay.
It might be like, oh, whatever. But here's my question. Have you ever participated in killing a Black man?
That's a good question. Hold up.
Eric, let's do it again. Ask the question again. I'm sorry. I wasn't ready.
Oh, yeah, you ready?
I'm ready.
RC, have you ever participated in killing a Black man?
So what sound effect was that?
He dropped the bomb of a question.
Oh, he dropped the bomb. Okay, he dropped the bomb. So what is your definition of killing?
Yeah.
When you say the word, that's a loaded question. So I don't know what you mean by killing.
Yes, it is. And I'm talking obviously I'm not talking about that physical realm. I'm talking about that spiritual, emotional, non-physical realm. Have you ever killed a Black man?
Have you ever had the proverbial knee on the neck of a Black man? Have you ever killed a Black man?
I think that's tough to answer because that's so vague. So I'm kind of like wondering, what are you thinking?
No.
You know when you've destroyed somebody emotionally or spiritually. You know, we all know that.
Do I need to go
Southside Wild 100 with the question? Do I need to go there? I've been trying all episode to be real, you know, professional.
Because I'm a woman? Why?
No. Just we want to know.
I don't know. So for me, I would say the first thing that comes to my mind when you say that is I'm running through my mind thinking about dating relationships, right? So now in my mind, I was thinking, okay, who have I dated that I couldn't stand by the end of it? Because that's probably what would happen. So now I'm running in my mind, and I'm like, well, shoot, probably everybody. So then I'm like, okay, let me back it up. Okay, I dated somebody once who said to me that when I fight, I'm like fighting and I won't stop. I keep going and going and going and going and going and going. But I don't know that has to do with this was a Black man.
Right.
It wasn't because they were Black. I mean, they just were the other person in the relationship. So they could have been a Black whoever and they would have got it. So I'm quite sure that hurt that man's spirit.
Okay.
I am 100% certain that the words that I spoke, I wasn't saying you're a trifling man. I didn't say that, but I was just going on about the relationship, how it didn't work. And so I am 100% certain that it hurt that man's spirit. If you called him today, he's going to be like, yeah, I remember that conversation and I don't want to, I don't even want to go back to it.
Okay. So you killed him.
And he talks to me to this day.
Okay.
And he spends quality time with my son to this day.
Okay, good.
Yeah, you shut him down.
So he survived. So he was resuscitated. So did I revive him?
Maybe.
Okay, no.
No?
This ain't that. No.
Scott, I didn't revive him.
If you want to soften it up, you can't. Yeah.
Only to make you feel good. That's all it's doing is making you feel good. Look, I know a lot of women that take pride in killing Black men.
Yeah.
Kill their whole soul.
But are you saying, like, because of their actions, because of their words? Like, what specifically are they doing?
Generally it's the words and actions. Like, you don't, you, definitely. Now, if you want to take it back to your earlier conversation about the patriarchal society, there are a lot of women that feel somewhat, you know, it's like proverbially oppressed. And so they don't, you know, in a relationship, you're definitely not about to do me here. So whatever I got to do to shut you down, whatever I got to do to let you know you ain't. It ain't working up in here. I'm in. So everything that come with that, to hurt a man's soul and spirit, to have him rethinking his whole existence, that's killing the black man. Now, I didn't even get to the question of, like, the statement of, do you, like, let a man, do you understand the concept of letting a man be a man? Black man specific.
You know, this, now we're getting into it. Now, y'all wait this long to get into the show now. Okay. Because now you're making me think. So I was in a long-term relationship with someone, and I remember I didn't think my words were harsh at all. Ooh. I thought that I was being straightforward. And I will say that now that you're saying this, I was probably coming from the perspective of, I am an educated sister who doesn't need to settle.
Yeah.
So my words were,
brother, and now you telling them you don't need to settle.
Yeah.
You didn't pick your brother, but you don't need to settle.
I don't need to settle. And so I ran down a laundry list of things he needed to change.
Ooh, yeah.
And I said, to be worthy of me, you need to do these things. But now, from my perspective, I saw it as, well, he could tell me the same thing and say, I don't want to deal with you. And so if you don't like these things that I'm saying you need to change to be with me, then you can say, chick, go jump in the lake.
That's, you know, what I want to ask you about that. Now, you did have that laundry list, but if it was a woman, would you have had the same list?
I am so glad that you asked me that, Eric. Eric, thank you. Y'all are not afraid to ask me these questions, because people are afraid to ask me these questions. So I will say I had the exact same list. I dated a woman who did not have some stuff on that list, and I said, oh, you got to go see about a man about a horse and go handle some business, and then if I'm available at that time, you can come back.
Okay.
It's not going down like that. Okay. Because the list is the list, and I have I've identified as queer, whether or not I use that terminology, since I was an adult, since I was 20. So for me, it didn't matter. Like, this is just whoever the person is, this is what they have to be with me. And right. People have said to me, well, you're not all that. Well, then, okay, so then you can keep moving. Like, that doesn't hurt my pride at all. But I will tell you, nobody has kept moving.
Okay. Yeah, so I wonder, for other people who identify the way that you do, well, we know that that's probably the case. So for some people, it probably is about, like, I really don't like you. You like men, but, like, they might not like men, but they're in a relationship with a man. So they're like, you know what? I'm going to give this dude the business. Don't really like him. I might be in it for some type of other convenience, but I'm going to kill him while we're together.
Yeah.
Break him down.
And it isn't even really a hetero, you know, I would imagine people are people. I mean, I'm sure some heterosexual women do that as well. Like, they want to be with a man romantically, but they really still don't like him.
Right. Exactly. You know, right. Exactly.
Here's what I need you for, but I don't like you. And right. I don't respect you, so I'm going to try to kill you. Here's where I've seen this show up too. Like, when in a relationship ends, and you'll have a woman go to everybody that they know and talk bad about this man. And I'm sure men do the same thing. But to me, that's a form of killing. Because we all know, if you're in a relationship, it's always a duality in terms of who did what and all of that.
Right.
For you to take that extra step, like, he's just the worst person in the world and all of that. That's killing the dude. Because you don't really know what the family, who they might go tell that to. And you might be over-dramatizing something, but they're taking you at your word. And so now you've killed this guy.
I'll give you a classic example of where this happens. This generally happens at the family gatherings. And somebody is with their mate, their spouse, or their significant other, and they compliment their significant other. And inevitably, somebody will look at their significant other and say, I wish my woman did that. I wish my man would do that. at the family gathering.
Yeah.
Look at him funny. Yeah. Or he'll be at the family gathering. He'll put his arm around his lady like, oh, you want to do that now? You don't do that no other time. You killing them. Like,
the women I date do that to me. Wow. They do that to me.
Yeah.
You know what else I just thought about? I got people in my family too. Like, you got these people in your family, like the couple hates each other, but when they get to the family gathering, you would think they had the best relationship in the world. They're smiling, they're taking pictures and all, and you looking at them like,
y'all need to get along.
I need to stop it.
That's another conversation though.
It is another conversation. It does tie into this because, like, this whole concept of killing a black man, there's so many different layers to it, but a lot of it comes down to appearances. Because if you're trying to kill this person and you're not talking about physically, then you're trying to make something, you're trying to make this person appear to be weak or non-existent, okay, or undermine them, or Scott was talking about before, low expectations. It's still always trying to appear, make this person appear to be
right,
non-existent. You're dead. You're not in the mix. So I'm glad that we had this conversation today. Do you all have anything that you want to say in ending this conversation? So
I do.
You're a black man. Bridget Scarborough said y'all getting deep. I do think we got very deep. Can we get deeper for 5 more minutes?
For 5 minutes, can I say, Scott Eric, have you ever participated in the killing of a black man?
Yeah, definitely.
Then how so?
I got bodies out here. Yeah.
Well, I definitely.
What was the purpose in that?
For me, it was, at the time, it was, you know, definitely steeped in ignorance and immaturity, thinking that that's part of how you be a man. So some of my killing of a black man came on the basketball court. This dude ain't shit. You know what I mean? He ain't nothing. He weak. You know, there's been probably a couple of times I definitely know there have probably been times like, you talking to him, talking to a female, like, why you talking to him? He ain't on nothing.
I've done that.
All the time. Like, what? Come on, you could do better than that. Come rock with me. All of that.
I'm embarrassed by that now, but I've definitely done that.
All of that, yeah.
Like, yo, you messing with that dude. Like,
yeah, right. All of that.
You don't even know the dude. You know what I mean? Right.
I don't even know him. I ain't never seen him before. Yeah. Character assassination? Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for your honesty.
Yeah, I've done it. You know, a lot of people in my circle and family are very competitive. So it's mostly about money. It's like, you know, dude, he broke. You know, this whole, he's broke, he ain't got, you don't know what these people got. But you know, when I was younger, we would spread that. Like, yo, fam, he broke. He ain't got no money. Like, I know he's acting like he got money. Like you literally have the password to their bank account.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, come on. So I've done a lot of that. I've done a lot of that. But I think ultimately, the reason for it is like you're trying to survive yourself. You know, you don't want to be the dude that they're asking, why is you talking to him? You know, you want to be the dude like, oh, you talking to him? You know, it's like all trying to survive at the end of the day. But yeah, I've definitely participated. But I'll say this, I participated in it less now. And I will say this too, I'm not perfect, but I also catch myself a lot of times. Because I think it's easier for me sometimes to criticize another black man subconsciously, and I have to catch myself. Because I'll be like, yo, he didn't do this, that, and the third on time, and I have to stop myself and be like, hold on now. Are you treating this person fairly just like you would another person that's not, doesn't look like you? And I've had to really have that conversation with myself. And the answer was, I was treating them unfairly. But it was still the spirit of competition. Like, he didn't do what he was supposed to do, but I did, you know, that kind of thing. And I still catch myself even to this day doing that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a big deal.
I want to thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you all. This has been a great discussion. Y'all got real.
Oh. Yeah, you got real too. This was good.
It was great.
To have you. I'm sorry, RC, drop your handles. Where can people find you at?
At RC Riley on Facebook, at Wrong Way Journey on Facebook, and on Twitter at RC Riley Empowers.
And what is your next episode that you have coming up with the attorney? I think it's coming up
tomorrow at 6 p.m. at RC Riley.
Okay, good. And you're going to be talking about wealth management, right?
Yeah, your area.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tune in and see what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'd love to get your comments on the show.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
We'll do that.
Thank you, RC. We'll catch up with you.
Thank you. Okay. All right. See ya.
Yo, E.
That was good. I enjoyed that.
That's good. Now, you know, we're still alive now.
I know.
We got another section of the show. We're supposed to vibe out to a song from Pooh. Are we still doing that this episode or what?
I hope so. You got one?
I got one. It's called Black Entrepreneur by a guy named Big Mel. Now, you know, Pharrell and Jay-Z just dropped a song called Black Entrepreneur.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one yet.
Well, we don't, much love to Pharrell and Jay-Z, but my man Big Mel, who's a pool, has music on pool, he dropped Black Entrepreneur a couple of years ago.
Okay.
So let's see if we can check that out. How about that?
Let's hear it.
All right, let's see.
Seven figures we chase. The greatness started off in a base. Complacent, they happy with mediocrity. Said I'm faced with little people that count on me. Bigger picture monopoly. Credit is on the rise. Invest in the paper properly. Why the double in size? Surprise, the vision is in my eyes. The action is in my hand. Mentality, your demise. Look, I'm just a man that refused to lose. When they asked me to pick a lane, I refuse to choose. Why? I want my business ventures in different parallels. Black entrepreneur, giving manure. Shift the format, I'm ready for combat. I'm comfortable with being uncomfortable. You should fall back. We talk success like it is handed. It's work for it. It workloads and it demands it. I can't stop it. The money right there. I see it. I see it. My vision's so clear. Black entrepreneur, give me a hand clap. We the best, no Khaled, this first team rap. Impressive, homie, now that's impressive. I know. Impressive, easy, now that's impressive. I know. Impressive, family, now that's impressive. We Black entrepreneur, now count your blessings.
Nice, that's Big Mel.
I like that, Big Mel.
Black ownership in our common state. Yeah. Let me just break it down for shits and giggles. You can't start a mission overlooking the simple. The NBA is 74% black. But when you ask how much is owned by us, whack. You would think it's a state of emergency because it seems like we purposely hit the time for urgency.
All right, that's Big Mel. They can hear the rest of it on pool.
Is Big Mel from the shop?
Big Mel from Chicago, man. Chicago has great.
I like that track. I'm gonna go back and listen to it. One of the many unique voices on music pool.
Yeah, man, and he's not killing black men.
Okay.
He's bringing life to black men. So shout out to Big Mel.
Yes, sir.
Black entrepreneur. They can musicspool.com.
We're wrapping this up now. You know, we were talking, Scott, about we're going to create this segment that we're going to do next episode. So episode 2, that is called Characters from Corporate.
Characters from Corporate.
Yeah, characters from corporate. And what this is, you all, is, you know, a lot of you all probably watching the show probably work in corporate, some type of corporate environment. And we know a lot of crazy stuff goes on in corporate, a lot of crazy people. And what we want you to do is to send in your crazy stories from corporate, and we're going to chop it up about your story. Now, you do not have to give, you know, we're not going to say anybody's name or anything like that, but send us your crazy stories, and we're going to chop it up. And, you know, we might offer a little bit of game. Me and Big Stu, we've had the pleasure of working in some corporate environments. We might be able to offer some feedback. But send us your most interesting, funny, crazy stories from corporate.
Characters from corporate. And you can tag us on social media. We're on Facebook right now. You can drop it in the Facebook group. Send us a message.
Yeah, DM, whatever.
Not in the DM, whatever the case may be.
K characters from Corporate. Now, I think we said that the, whoever story that we pick for the next segment, we're going to send them an MSG gift pack, right?
It's an MSG gift pack, man. It's T-shirt. We got lapel pins, as you see here, stickers. We got, you know, coffee mugs, man, you know. Couple cool things coming down the pipe. So if your story is read on our future episodes, you will receive a gift bag, as Eric just said.
That's pretty cool to be offering merch.
We offering merch in season two, man.
Yes, sir.
So
let's wrap this up, man. What are your closing thoughts today?
A million ways to kill a black man, brother. You know, I think there's a lot to that, right? There's a lot to that, man. And it's unfortunate that we have to even have this conversation, but I think it was a very lively conversation. I think RC brought some spice to the conversation, some very unique millennial type perspectives to the conversation. And the one thing I want to walk away with, man, is be mindful of the killing of the black man that you might be doing, and check yourself in the voice of Ice Cube before you wreck yourself.
Check yourself before you wreck yourself. I'm doing that on a daily basis, man. And I think the thing that I'm taking away from this is we have to continue to be open to other perspectives. You know, sometimes we just think about our own perspective. I'm glad that you and I were courageous enough to have this conversation as black men and not feel like we were being, you know, weak or whining or anything like that. I think anybody who knows us knows that, you know, that's not the case at all. It's just it's something that we experienced and that we took taken part in, and we think is important to talk about as much as the physical killing of the black man.
Yeah.
You know, life exists in more than one realm. It's not just the physical, you know, it's the physical, it's the emotional, it's the spiritual, and this whole realm that you can't necessarily put your hand on, but it's very real.
Yeah.
So we wanted to touch on that. What are we talking about on our next episode? I can't even remember.
Why would you throw me under the Look. You got me. The next episode, and we have it. Let's tell the people. Are you pulling it, or you want me to
pull it? Yeah, I'm pulling it up now. Give me a second.
Okay, because I'm right with you. The next episode, do we have any bills to pay before we get out of here?
We do not have any more bills to pay on this show, no.
Okay.
Now, of course, I can't even find the...
Don't worry. I think I'm pulling it. Right.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
You got it?
Yeah. Okay, so see, the second one... Okay, this is going to be a good one. It ties into the RC's topic for Monday. Why are you scared to talk about money, investments, will, trust, and protecting your family's income? Okay, that'll be a good one.
You know what? That is a good one. So, and let me give you a little prelude, man. So you know this, man. I jumped into a couple of susus.
Oh, you did it. Okay.
Did. I jumped into a couple of susus. So I have some very unique perspective about why people are afraid, right, to participate in this wealth building conversation. I want to definitely talk about that, you know. It's been an interesting experience, to say the least.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear about that. That's something I have not done. I have a lot of clients that do participate. So, yeah, I want to get your feedback on that.
Okay. All right.
You ever watched that video that Dr. Boyce had about that, about suicide?
Yeah, I did. And actually, watching that video kind of gave me the impetus to go ahead and participate.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm really interested about that next week's episode then. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us for this episode of Money, Sex, Gen X Podcast. This has been the first episode of season 2. We can't wait to see you next week for episode 2. We have a website. We are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of that stuff. So we'll be dropping pieces of this episode. We'll cut it up in clips, and we'll get you some audio out there too. Tell a friend. You know what I mean? Tell a friend about the show. And if you want to power any segments of our show, reach out to us and we can talk about what those ads look like. But for now, peace.
Let me do this right. Let me do this right. Let me give the outro proper like we did the intro. Okay. And hopefully it comes right on up. But it's taking too long. So, oh, here it is. Nope, it's not. It's taking too long. Here we go, right here. Shout out to DJ Ange. All right, that's our outro, brother.
My favorite part.
That's it.